Hi, and welcome to Gary England's Last Storm. This is Mark.
And this is Dave.
And we're going to talk about tonight's game against the LA Lakers.
It was a tough loss, and it's hard to get hard to watch our team get beat down like that. But there was a lot of great things that we both saw tonight that we would like to talk about.
That's right. This was a big game for Poku, and Roby got a bunch of minutes, and that was great to see. Kendrick Williams played really well. We'll get into that and a bunch more here on Gary England's Last Storm.
Well, the message to the team, you know, up big, down big, first quarter, fourth quarter is always that it's a 48-minute game. And, you know, every minute in the game is an opportunity to compete and an opportunity to, you know, continue to forge an identity as a team. And I thought, you know, an example of that was we were down, I think, 24 late in the second quarter. And I thought that that group that closed the half did a really good job, get us back in the game, get us within striking distance. I think we were down 12 at halftime. That's a good example of those guys just continuing to play.
Well, to start the game, we had Hill playing, which kind of caught me off guard because I thought we'd be resting him. But he was in.
We had a lot of big games by some of our young guys today, and it was really great to see the maturity that they played and the big minutes that they played due to the fact it was getting to become a blowout. So it was really nice to see that Maladone led all minutes tonight. He did great. He did so many things well tonight that we were both really encouraged. He had 7 points. He had 4 assists, and all the assists were really great. A couple of them were bounce passes and very difficult bounce passes at that. And he had 2 rebounds getting up he got up the floor very well. So Maladone played really well tonight. We were both really excited about his style of play and how he matched up against the other guys.
Right. Dort hit a 3 early, which kept his streak going along, which is at 11 games. He's hit one every game. I guess it goes back further than that because he hit one in the Rockets game 7. He hit a bunch, actually. So we're talking, like, you know, at least 12 games now where he's hit a 3, and this has become very consistent for us, and that's been really good.
Yeah, again, tonight he was 50%. He was 3-for-6. That's 2 nights in a row. And it's really encouraging to see him shoot this well right now.
Now, Baisley had a tough assignment on Anthony Davis, and it definitely looked like Anthony was going after him, kind of picking on him a little bit. And so Baisley, you know, definitely got better at defending him, was able to stay down, stay between him and the basket better as the game went on. And there was one shot where I really thought that Baisley contested very well. I think he really kind of bothered Davis with his length, and then he was able to run the court and get to the basket and get a bucket, and it just really showed, you know, Baisley's progression. Now, Baisley ended up spraining his ankle in the third quarter, and they don't think it's too serious, but they're going to wait till the morning to give us an assessment on that. Here's what Coach had to say about that.
Yeah, it's some sort of sprain. You know, the severity of it remains to be seen. A lot of it, I think, with those, at least from what Donnie told me, is you got to see him in the morning and see kind of how he responds to it. But, you know, for right now, we'll check him out in the morning and see where it's at, and then we'll update you guys appropriately.
Well, at the end of the first quarter, we were down 30-21, so we were down 9. Poku hit a 3, and this was actually his best offensive game, the first game he got into double figures.
Yeah, this was huge. I was really encouraged to see Poku. He proved tonight that he's just not only a defender like we've been able to see recently. The way that he was able to get up the floor and his release on the shot is something that's incredibly fast. I really like how he completely plays in a different style than we've ever seen before. And it's really why you and I believe that this kid is going to be spectacular. At the end of the night with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 blocks, adding 10 points to the game. It was really exciting to see how he was able to play tonight and really come out of his shell against a team like the Lakers.
Yeah, it was. It was really great to see him get up there and use his length to impact the game. Here's a little clip of Poku talking about the improvements he's made. I'm going to follow that up with a clip from Coach and then SGA, both talking about Poku.
Right now I'm working on everything, literally, like dribbling the ball, shooting defense. I'm in a weight room like every day, trying to prove my body. You know, just working everything, because you gotta be, if you want to be a good, great player and help your team, you gotta be great at everything. You know, be able to do everything on the court.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, that's already shown up. You know, obviously the game's fast for any rookie, any year, and it's fast for second and third year players, to be honest with you, but especially when you're a rookie. But his length shows up in a lot of different ways. You know, when the guy he's guarding gets a step on him, he can recover with his length. And then when he's in help specifically, you know, and they try to pass, you know, he's pretty active in passing lanes. And so we evaluate our defense every possession, you know, we chart that stuff out, and he's done a nice job there. You know, and the game's just going to slow down, you know, every single experience he gets and Teo gets and Josh Hall, anybody that's, you know, in the first year of their experience.
Yeah, as young as Poku is, he knows how to play on both ends of the floor. Has great feel for the game. Like I said, on both ends of the floor, whether it be reacting to defenses offensively or making plays defensively, he knows what he's doing. And you guys have seen that every night. He's making that the hustle plays, the extra plays. He's getting better every day.
After that big through by Poku, he had a really big putback dunk, which is awesome to see. And then Dort hit a couple of threes. So Dort hit three threes tonight. He ended up with 9 points. That was all he got on the evening. But on that third three, you know, it was great to see. But, you know, it brought us to, we were down by 16 points. So we weren't really in it at that point.
Yeah, we weren't. But it was still nice to see our guys fight and fight hard. A lot of times when a blowout is happening like that, you see a lot of guys give up. And blowouts get even worse and out of hand. But our guys really fought all the way through, and it was really nice to see, even in the second quarter when things were kind of out of hand, our guys were able to stick with it and keep it semi-close.
Right, because there was definitely moments where the game seemed like it was just going to be completely out of hand. And at the end, it did get the margin got pretty wide. But in that second quarter, we were able to close it to 12 going into halftime. So that was nice to see after being down by 18, maybe 20 points at one point in the second quarter. So bringing it to 12 gave us a little bit of a feeling that if we could come back with some energy, you know, we could definitely create some issues. And to start the third quarter, Roby got to the basket, and he was able to score, and that was great to see.
Yeah, Roby did a great job. He played a lot of center position on defense against Marc Gasol, and really, I mean, I felt like he played like a very mature big guy. It was really great to see because his natural position is a small forward, and I felt like he did a really good job at showing how versatile he is and where he's going to be playing out this entire season.
Right. SGA had a pretty consistent night. He was able to hit a three in the third quarter. You know, obviously his scoring wasn't where he wanted to be, but in the end, he wasn't playing, you know, those key minutes in the same way he would have been if we were competing. So I felt like he did a great job. Hami hit another three, which is good to see him continuing to knock those down. The end of the third quarter, we were down 92-93-71. And going into the fourth, it was clear this was going to be all about development and seeing what we could get from just like building blocks for the youngest players out on the court. And right away, we saw what we wanted to see from Poku.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like Coach put a lot of trust in Poku tonight, and I felt like he decided to put Poku in the game with a lot of different matchups, whether he was playing center or he's playing the power forward, even the small forward on defense. Coach played him a lot of different positions, and it was really great to see that he really stepped up on defense, in a big way. So I was really, really excited for Poku starting off in the third quarter. I'm pumped about this kid, and I'm really pumped to see what's going to happen in the future.
Right, and so he hit another three in the fourth quarter, so that's two for the game. So his shot is really looking like it's coming along.
Yeah, I've been really crucial on his arc on his shot, but I kind of feel like there might be just a funky shot that we're seeing. And there might not be any arc included in his shot. And if that's the case, then we're just going to have to figure out how to cheer for him when he takes a shot.
It'll come. I have no doubt that with practice with the team, it'll come. But they didn't have a training camp this year. They didn't have a summer league. He got thrust right into NBA action, and he's just figuring out the pace. So the arc will come, but it definitely looks like, especially with his size, he's almost like shooting it down to the basket.
Yeah, he doesn't have to get far off the ground to make it look like it's going straight down towards the basket. But with that being said, I feel like this kid has a lot of potential, and I'm really excited, not just because that he obviously has a shot that he's confident in, but all the other things that he does on the floor. It's starting to remind me a lot of other young centers in the league that we have actually witnessed and watched grow up from being skinny little punks or chunky little punks into the superstars or semi-superstars that they are.
Right, that's exactly right. So then at that point, Kendrick Williams, he really got in there and just made a difference. He got a couple of steals. He seemed like he got a couple of blocks. He was just all over the place, drawing charges, just making plays. And he definitely was making great passes. He was definitely impacting the game. And here's what he had to say about the game and just learning.
It's definitely a learning experience. Those guys over there, especially them coming off winning the championship. I mean, they're a good team. So you just want to take all the negatives and kind of learn from it. Of course, it didn't go our way tonight, but I think with this team, we do a real good job of bouncing back and learning from all our mistakes.
So SGA ended up with 17 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and he had a few comments about what we could do better against the Lakers. I'll let you guys hear that now.
Try to play faster, be more aggressive, be more physical than their physicality, obviously. Those just to name a few, but nobody's obviously perfect and unbeatable. There's things that every team has flaws on. We didn't execute them tonight, and we didn't get a W, but we'll try to get better for tomorrow.
So, in the end, we got to see quite a few minutes from Josh Hall and Moses Brown.
Yeah, that was really exciting. I am a fan of two-way players getting minutes. I don't care if they're burn minutes. I don't care if it's a 30 seconds. To me, having two-way players get minutes is big because it gives you a chance to assess them. It gives you a chance to see if they're going to be any good. And I was really, really, really excited to see Moses play the way that he did tonight.
Yeah, he put up 6 points and really not that many minutes, probably like 8 minutes. 3 rebounds, 1 assist. He was playing very, very well. That was great to see.
Yeah, he was just hustling. And I think that's one of the keys that if you look at our bench and you look at each player all the way down, I think it proves that we have something on this team that not a lot of NBA teams have. And we have straight up hustle. We have hustle from, you know, Kenny Hustle himself. We have hustle plays from Hammy. We have hustle plays from Muscala and Josh and Jackson and Poku and Roby. These guys are on our bench coming up, and every single time that they play, I get reminded of how much they hustled, how much they really, truly care about winning.
Yeah, Roby had 11 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. He really played a great game, and just a really impressive to see the way he was a part of the offense. He moved the ball up the court. He dribbled up the court. He attacked the basket off the dribble. He finished at the basket. He made the right passes at the right times. It was really impressive.
I get incredibly excited about this kid. I think that he is going to be a big-time player in the NBA. I think that we got another steal, and it's really interesting. I was listening to the Lakers broadcast today at halftime, and they mentioned about our team, and it was something that was very interesting. We have 7 players that went either undrafted or drafted in the second round that are getting major minutes on our basketball team.
Yeah, that's probably unlike any other team in the NBA right now.
It really is. I mean, I think it proves that we're drafting and we're looking at the way to develop players in a completely different mindset. And I'll be honest with you, if we compare our team to everybody else, I get excited about this team and the way that our players are playing and the chances that these guys develop into legit players in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm seeing the development that I want to see. Definitely been encouraged by how hard these players play, how well the coaching staff seems to be able to communicate with them, and how improvement is so consistent and regular. And it's just, it all goes back to the team choosing to focus on the process instead of the result.
Yeah, man, it's exciting. It's 0-0 mindset, man. We talk about this every single time, but they're coming out with a 0-0 mindset day in and day out. And I think we're able to see this now, and we're able to start comprehending what Coach and what Sam and all the guys and the staff have been talking about, this whole 0-0 mindset.
100%. Even though it feels like, oh no, we lost two games in a row, we're waking up tomorrow with a 0-0 mindset, and we're attacking the challenges of the day. We're looking to get a little bit better. And a game like the Lakers, it actually provides us a chance to get a lot better. And that's the thing, like, we've already faced a number of times that we've had tough losses this year. It's not that we're going to face adversity. That's not the problem. The question is, what do you do with the adversity? And if you handle it properly, then you can do anything. You can do anything. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing, is how this team bounces back, you know, from this, because they've already faced adversity. They've already proved they can bounce back. And I'm just not worried. I have no doubt that what this team is made of, but what the only way to find out what you're made of is to put yourself under some pressure. And that's what we're under right now.
Yeah. And we've got some big games coming up. We have winnable games coming up. And I think it's key that we see how Coach and how the players react to a day off after a really hard loss like this. So it will be really fun to see how everything is done.
All right. And I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, we've got a couple more things to talk about. They're not necessarily about the game. They're more just about, you know, what's going on with the Oklahoma City fan base and how we really believe that the Thunder fans need to get behind this team, not just because they're from our city, but that's plenty of reason. You know, they put on that jersey. It represents us. We need to support them. But also just because, you know, these are college kids, and they deserve better than people just trashing them. So if you want to listen to some of that talk, stick around.
All right. Let's get straight into this, Mark. All right, my question for you today comes from the Twitter feed, and I feel like we've been very vocal recently about how we've been feeling. So this question has to do with rebuilding versus tanking. Can you, Mark, can you have a good team and compete when you are rebuilding as a team?
It happens all the time. That's what the Celtics did.
All right, so the next question is, can you have a good team and compete when you are tanking?
Well, that's like an oxymoron, because to tank means to intentionally field a bad team with the purpose of losing to increase your chances of getting better draft compensation. So you can't, like, if you're competing while you're tanking, then you're not good at tanking. You're failing at tanking. So, like, you're not tanking. You might be declaring that you're tanking, but you're failing at it if you're competing. The point of tanking is to not compete.
All right, so the question that basically you're saying to me is that if you're rebuilding, your goal is to compete every single night. If you're tanking, your goal is to lose every single night to get a better chance of getting a better draft pick.
Right.
Now,
so,
knowing that about the Oklahoma City Thunder, knowing how to put those in words, what would you say the Oklahoma City Thunder are doing?
Okay, so the difference between tanking and rebuilding, it might seem subtle, but it's pretty massive. At first, you start out doing the same thing. You trade all of your older and best players for any picks and assets that you can get. But when you're tanking, you keep going. You do what the Sixers did. Oh, we got another asset. We're going to trade that. Oh, he looks good. We're going to get two picks for that. And every time you get an asset, you trade it so you have more picks. But when you're rebuilding, you move those players out, you collect the assets, you make room for the new players, you develop those players. When you rebuild, you clear the way for the younger players. And one of the important things that you can really tell that gives you indication of whether or not we're rebuilding or we're tanking is George Hill. Okay, George Hill has value on the trade market. but we're not trading him because we're trying to compete. If we were willing to tank, then we would trade George Hill. And we would probably trade SGA because he would be too good for tanking right now. And you would look at it and you'd think, okay, now we have a really, really young core. And as soon as Horford was ready to trade and he had any positive value at all, you would trade him. But that's not what's going on. What I see happening out there is our team is building chemistry. The players are getting better. They're improving. And the veterans that we have on the court are helping the younger players get better. They're a part of a team. George Hill, Al Horford, Mike Muscala are not accidentally on the Thunder team. And combined, they have 35 years of playing experience, which is critical for a young team. If we were tanking, we would trade that off, and then we would leave a bunch of young players out there, and we'd hope for the top pick. And so many people, they think this is the way to go. And it's because of people like Andrew Schleck who go around and they convince everybody that there's only one way to go. And Down to Dunk has been infested with this loser mindset. And it's not just Down to Dunk. I used to be a subscriber to that one podcast, OKC Dream Team, with John Hamm and Eric Horn and Royce Young. But the thing is, anytime somebody would try to begin to talk about the possibility of our team being able to compete and be good now, Andrew Schlecht, who somehow controls the microphone or whatever, he never would let them finish their sentence, and he would get them to start talking about how we're tanking. We're not tanking, okay? And all the dumbasses out there who don't know the difference are so convinced that what they're seeing is tanking. But I just want to let everybody know, what you're seeing is not tanking. We're not tanking. We were never tanking. And this one example that everybody brings up, oh, well, Sam Presti tanked before. He did not tank before. Okay, he rebuilt before. I know you weren't paying attention because it was while we were in Seattle, but the truth is we rebuilt. We moved out the older players. We gave the younger players an opportunity. We collected the assets, and we continued to compete every year. One year we were not so good at competing, the first year in Oklahoma City. That's the year everybody wants to bring up and compare this year to do. But we are so much better than that year. We have so much more veteran experience.
So my next question has to do with our vets. And something else, something somebody said on Twitter was, if we are not tanking, then why are we playing our vets, Horford and Hill, under 30 minutes each game?
Because that's called load management. It's what we did with Gallo. It's what we did with CP3. It's the way to go when you have older players. We're not playing them on the second night of back-to-backs. Now, we did George Hill tonight, but that was a surprise. For the most part, we're not going to be doing that. I think a lot of it has to do with we understand the value in having our veterans be fresh and healthy when it comes time to trade them and let the other players move up. We're not trying to burn them out. So it's load management. The problem is the people on Twitter, they don't really understand this type of stuff. And so you kind of end up talking in circles, and it's okay. I think that the reason that I take the time to talk to people about it is because there's only been one way of thinking that's been allowed to be talked about. And it's not like this is such a common way of thinking. Everybody feels like you have to lose. I mean, it's become this standard where everybody believes that it's the only way to win. But there's no historical example of tanking working. And if you think it was a tank, take a look again. It was probably a rebuild. Rebuilding does work. Rebuilding is a huge part of success. Tanking is terrible. Top picks do not always equal championships. And if you want to think about it, how many top 10 picks did the Warriors use to build their championships? And yes, top 10 picks do help teams win championships, but usually not the team that picked them. I'm sorry, but it's not.
Yeah, you've brought up a really good point, and something that we heard today earlier in a podcast that was really important to what we've been saying. And it was one of our very beloved fans, I guess you could say, in the enduring way. But was one of the people that we've listened to for a very long time, addressed what we have been talking about and really kind of shove in our face exactly what he thinks that this team should be able to do. And winning 45 games, in his opinion, is something that if we want to do every single year in and year out, then we need to go and root for a different team. So here he is talking about that right now.
Take away the season, and if things do go poorly, which I think that they're set up to go pretty poorly, that it becomes pretty exciting pretty fast for this team with the NBA draft and the offseason. So, and the thing is, like, some people are like, hate the tanking stuff, and I get it. Like, you want your team to win. That's great. Here's the thing, is that the people that want to tank, it means that they want their team to win at the highest level. The Thunder are executing this so they can win at the highest level. Sure, you want to win 45 games. That's cool. You should go be a fan of another team.
Right, and I just want to dispel of this entire notion that just because you want to make the playoffs with a young team and get to 45 wins, that you never want to get past the first round. That's an assumption that they're making. It's a straw man argument, okay? I'm not the one who's saying I don't want to get past the first round. That's the thing that they're projecting. They assume you can't get past the first round unless you get top 10 picks. Once again, top 10 picks do not equal getting out of the first round. They just don't. It does happen sometimes, okay? But if you want to think about it, like, it's usually in the case of injury, okay? It's usually in the case of a trade for that pick. It's not the case of a top 10 pick taking a team from the lottery into the second round of the playoffs. Really doesn't happen.
So let's bring up a really good point, that something that I've been thinking about a lot recently is our first year of having a Thunder young team make it to the playoffs. We ended up playing as an 8 seed, the Los Angeles Lakers, and they were very good that year. They looked really solid. In fact, I believe they ended up winning the championship that year. But here's the thing that happened with that. Our young players stepped up in the right situation, and we brought the Lakers. We took them to 6 games that year. And I think that's an important thing about that, is that was one of the greatest things that we were able to do for those young players. It's not about being swept in the first round or anything like that. Making the playoffs is good for your young players and the time that it takes for them. We don't care if we're an 8th seed playing against the Los Angeles Lakers in the first round. All we would need to do is win 1 or 2 games for it to be a very big confidence boost for us.
Right, and making the playoffs makes players want to be traded to your team, makes free agents want to come, and people always say, we're not going to get a big free agent, and I understand that. But let's just face it. The reason that Kawhi wanted to go to the Clippers had a lot to do with the fact that they went to the playoffs and they competed with the Warriors, and he saw the opportunity for him to step into that spot. If you want to take an example from football, okay, the Denver Broncos were able to make it to the playoffs with Tim Tebow. And you know what? Peyton Manning was like, hey, if they can do that with him, I bet I can get a Super Bowl. And he was right. So making it to the playoffs, it does show other players that there's a chance for them to come and compete. And I know both of those were free agent examples, but we have already shown here with the Thunder that we can trade for players who want to come. If a player is discontent with the organization they're in, they're going to be willing to come to us if we're going to the playoffs. If we're not making it to the playoffs, you're not going to get any of those stars who are disgruntled for a very good trade.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point. And I think that one of the things that we've seen this year is a lot of disgruntled players playing and playing in positions that they don't want to play. And it's not something that's good for the locker room. It's not good for the cohesiveness between the coaches and the players. And it's something that when you have in your locker room and have a player that doesn't want to be there, it just destroys the way that your team works together. So,
and who wants to be there with a loser? Nobody.
Yeah, nobody. And watching this Thunder team, watching how they play and how they're connected and how they work as a team and how Hartford and Hill have really embraced the younger guys and brought them into a role that really, it just makes me feel proud. It makes me feel proud to watch this team. It makes me feel proud that this team has been put together, and we get the privilege to watching this team blossom in front of our eyes, because we honestly, none of us, not Royce Young, not Andrew Schlack, none of us know how good this Thunder team is going to be in 5 years. We all don't know.
So why don't we just cheer? Why don't we just cheer for this young team? Why don't we stop cheering for someone who's not on the team, stop cheering for everything else, and just look at the product that's out on the court, say these are individuals, these are players, a lot of them are college age, most of them are college age. We can cheer for them. We can encourage them. We can be positive. And if we make the playoffs, that's a good thing. We don't have to trick ourselves into thinking that we want to be losers. Like, it doesn't need to be that way. And if everybody would just stop and relax, then I wouldn't feel the need to keep telling people that they're wrong. But the fact is, we're not tanking. Tanking is a strategy deployed by losers when they think, well, we're already losing. Let's really lose a lot more. That way, maybe we can, like a balloon that's been held underwater, bounce back up. But it very rarely leads to anything other than perpetual losing. It just doesn't work. And people are like, oh, yeah, well, you should want to tank more. If you were willing to tank more, then good things could happen. Well, no. No.
Well,
teammates should not want to lose. Portland should not want to lose. The Jazz should not want to lose. These fan bases are right to cheer for their team to win.
And we can look at the direct correlation to the Timberwolves and the disaster of that team and how many number one picks that they've had or number two picks that they've had. And they did not pull anything together.
Let's just talk
about
it. But, I mean, if I'm thinking off the top of my head alone, they had Anthony Bennett, Andrew Wiggins, Karl-Anthony Towns, and now they have another one right now. What's his name?
Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards.
You said four number ones and a number two pick in their lineup over the last 5 years?
Yeah, and think about what Jimmy Butler did when he had to be there. Like, Jimmy Butler would never act that way with a Thunder organization, but he didn't want to not make the playoffs. He didn't want to be with a bunch of people who had a loser mentality. This is not a novel idea. Like, losing is a bad idea. Like, too many people have been convinced that losing is a good idea. And, like, when you look around and everybody is doing the wrong thing and it feels so wrong, it's okay to stand up and say something is wrong and do the right thing. And the right thing in this moment is for the city to embrace this team and not the team that they wish they had. And all these so-called journalists need to check themselves because they don't have any journalistic integrity if they fixate on a kid that's not on their team. And like Ryland Stiles does, I counted him at least three times on just the last podcast, say Cade Cunningham. Because he wanted Cade Cunningham. He wanted Cade Cunningham. Like, why doesn't he go cover the Cowboys? Why is he covering the Thunder if he wants him so much?
So he essentially wants us to throw our season up and to throw our flag up saying defeat, defeat, defeat for the possibility that we could coin flip this into getting Cade Cunningham. Like, what is this guy, fucking a delusional?
And the thing is, it's not even a coin flip, right? And it's ridiculous. And so, yeah, we're supposed to throw away a season of development. And they always say, no, what they want is us to compete and lose. Like, competing and losing is a negative feedback loop. Like, you need to have positive feedback loops. You need to have good experiences out on the court, not all bad ones. This is understood by people, with the exception of people clearly like Andrew Schlecht. And the people that he has completely shut down. I've listened to them every time that anybody wants to say anything is, you know, not going his way. He's convinced. He's so convinced that he knows Sam Presti and what Sam Presti's thinking, and he doesn't. He's wrong. Like, he literally said at the beginning of the season that he would have traded Hamidou Diallo for anything, any asset whatsoever, and he assumed that Hamidou Diallo would have trouble getting a minimum contract in the NBA. He said that. And then all of a sudden, Hamidou goes out and does what he does. And then he has the guts tonight to ask SGA, did what Hamidou Diallo did tonight or what he's been up to, does that surprise you? And SGA is like, no, he works hard on his craft. And when you work hard on your craft, you get better. And you know who it surprised? Andrew. Because Andrew thought that this team was supposed to be bad. He thought Hamidou Diallo was supposed to be bad. They're not supposed to be bad. And it's okay that they can't figure that out. I just want everybody to know that, like, when this all goes down, it'll be just like last year. And he'll go around saying, I'm sorry, everybody. I didn't realize we'd keep those players. Like, I'm sorry. Like, he's hedged his bets enough where if we keep the players, you know, and we make the playoffs, he said that we could do that. He just didn't think we were going to keep the players because he thought deep down Sam Presti really wanted to lose. Sam Presti didn't want to lose. Sam Presti has never wanted to lose. Yes, he likes draft picks, but just look at what's happening with the Rockets. Look at what James Harden just got traded, and they really didn't come back with much other than Victor Oladipo. And so now that whole Rockets team is John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, and Victor Oladipo, and we have their pick, top four protected, that's it?
Dude, and that's the point. And, like, this is what we've been hounding in people ever since we started this, is that we can expect other teams to fuck it up right now. Like, you can't expect every single team, day in and day out, to have a team that's going to compete every single year. And because of that, a lot of the draft picks that we have accumulated, I would probably say someplace along the lines of 10 of them, or even 7 of them, could turn into lottery picks. And
right,
those numbers are insane.
What makes a great organization? Okay, and I think the reason that you would ask yourself that question in this situation is because you want to assess the value of your picks, okay? Having a great owner is incredibly important for a great organization. Having a great general manager, having a great coach, okay? Now, having great players is important, but remember, all of our picks are in the future, okay? And everybody thought that the Rockets weren't going to collapse until they did. So you can't really just say, like, oh, the players are good enough. Now, if you have the right ownership, if you have the right general manager, like, Miami's picks are good, but, you know, you're never going to expect them to be great because they have good ownership and good management and good coaching, okay? So the thing is, the Rockets and the Clippers both have relatively new ownership that is unproven. They both have new management that is unproven. They both have new coaches that are unproven. Those picks are the ones that have the most value right now, the Rockets and the Clippers, because they are unproven commodities in all three levels, ownership, coaching, and general managers. So at this point, like, that's what we're looking at. Those are the value. Anything that is unknown when it comes to coaching, management, and ownership is incredibly valuable to us because you just don't know what tomorrow will bring, but you do know that the right management and ownership will make it a lot better. But Tillman Fertitta, he's a terrible owner. He got into it with Mike D'Antoni. He got into it with James Harden. He handpicked the coach he wanted. He handpicked the general manager he wanted, and he got rid of Daryl Morey. Okay, he has totally transformed that organization into exactly what he wanted, and he's training his son to take over the general manager duties. Okay? I mean, to me, that checks all the boxes for the pick that you want to have right now. And so let's just sit back and let the Warriors fuck it up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Let Houston fuck it up.
No, I agree. By sitting back and letting Houston fuck this up is something that we should just allow them to do. Like, here's the thing that people need to sit back and realize, okay, is our picks and what they accumulate to is we get the Houston picks, right? So let's just say Houston for the next 3 years, right, they suck, all right? So three of our picks turn out to be good with Houston. Three of our picks because we got two and then this pick swap with them.
Right.
All right? So all three of those picks turn out. If we can get all three of those picks turn out, and then we were able to take the Clippers picks, and we just turn out two of those picks right there, we're talking now at least five picks that are in the lottery. So how, again, why do we need to throw our towels up and say we want to be done, we don't want to play? Because reality is that we don't need to tank to be good.
Right. And here's the thing. Everybody that I get into a debate, when you get them into a corner, they always come back with this, like, well, that's just my opinion. I'm not convincing any of the ownership of my opinion or any of the management. So, like, it's not a big deal. Well, you are a fan, and you are convincing other fans of your opinion, and fans do need to support the team. They need to do it in a way that's not just dependent on whether or not Russ or KD or one of your favorite players ever is there. Every time they go out on the court, they put on a jersey that says Oklahoma City. If that's not enough for you to cheer for, then get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, like if you're going to sit here and you're going to tell us that you think the best thing that Oklahoma City could do for the next 2 or 3 years is win a tops of 30 games to put ourselves in a position to get better draft picks, then we don't want to hear your shit anymore. And I'm so glad that we started something like this. And I'm so glad we're being vocal about this on Twitter, is because this is our fucking domain now. You guys have messed this up so much that you have created something, and people are starting to listen to us. And guess what they're starting to say? These guys aren't fucking morons. And you guys are fucked now.
Yeah, like, let's just face it. Winning 30 games over 3 years would make us a laughing stock. These people want to turn our city into a laughing stock. Does that not mean anything to anybody? Because that means something to me. Like, I give a shit about this city. I mean, I remember when Royce Young founded Daily Thunder, and he had the Daily Bolts. And Daily Bolts were all about showing that the national media was saying something about our team. It was like, look, USA Today said this. ESPN said this. Now the prerogative of everybody is to lose. And if you listen to Andrew Schleck, it's like he acts like, well, now he knows so much about the NBA. Back when he started out, he didn't know anything about NBA. All he knew about was microphones. Now he knows a lot about the NBA, and he's so convinced that losing is the way. I'm just saying, like, here's the thing.
Here's the thing. Let's just put it out there for people. So Andrew and Ryan Stiles, some of these guys, they're super young guys, or they don't have a lot of experience with basketball. Mark and I have had over half of our lives coaching and playing and being a super freaking fan of the Oklahoma City Thunder for the last 10 years. So you say what you want to say about us, but when we have over half of our life in coaching and playing and then been a super team and know how the systems run, we watched how New York screwed this up, so we watched it already in hand, and now we're looking at it and we're seeing these guys and we're saying, they're encouraging us, our team, to do exactly what the Knicks have done the last 10 years. Why the hell would we want to do that? Why?
Yeah.
Like, at what point would that be good for our city and our team? All it would do would make it so that the people in Oklahoma City wouldn't go to the games and then make our franchise worthless, and in 10 years there would be no Oklahoma City Thunder.
Man, so I live up in New England, right? And so here's the thing. I heard this fan of the Patriots talking right before the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and they were playing the Eagles, and she said, you know, we've won so many Super Bowls, the Eagles, they haven't won any. You know, I hope the Eagles win this one. And this was a Patriots fan, you know, and she must have been like 15 or something, I don't know. And I remember just thinking, like, you know, winning breeds complacency. And when you win a lot, you get complacent. And the Oklahoma City fans are complacent. They no longer care about the little things, and they're willing to pass on the little joys. And look, no matter what you say, you can always come back to this. If they're trying to convince you to lose, no matter what they say, they're losers. They can say, no, they want to win even more, and they're willing to go through the pain of losing to win. Okay, that's a mental trick. These are losers trying to convince you to lose. Let me give you an example, right? If somebody tries to convince you that your asshole is your elbow, okay, you should definitely question why, right? But if they're really trying to convince you, at some point you might realize that your asshole is trying to convince you that. You know what I mean? So here's the thing.
Totally.
If you got losing all over your face, it's because they convinced you to touch it and wipe it everywhere, and they told you that it was winning.
Yeah, man, like, I have so many comments about that, but 90% of them are dirty, so I'm going to leave that there. And I have got to say this, is that when push comes to shove, is this has turned into us versus them. And I'm proud of that, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to get people to understand is that we're winning. We're not losers. And
thinking
is losing.
They're right. No matter what we think, it won't change the way that management handles this. They're going to do whatever they want. But here's the thing. Andrew Schlecht, Royce Young, John Hamm, all these motherfuckers, right? Their job is to give people insight. Their job is to be experts. If they're waiting for the Thunder to surpass expectations for them to adjust theirs, then they're already too late. They're already too late for the party. Their job is to be on top of this, not get so stuck with an idea that when all evidence is to the contrary, that they deny it, simply to prove that they're right and they're never wrong. Trust me, it doesn't matter what we think. The Thunder is going to do whatever they want, okay? That's the truth. But the thing is, we know what they're going to do because recent history is an excellent indicator of the future. The past gives you an idea of where things are headed. If you think that you can give me one example of tanking leading to a championship, you're wrong. But I can give you multiple examples of rebuilding leading to a championship. So it's so obvious what we're doing. So in the end, we're not trying to convince Andrew Schlecht and the other jackasses like that call themselves the Dream Team that we're right, okay? We're just letting them know in the future when they try to say nobody saw this coming that they're lying, that they're lying. A lot of people saw this coming, okay? There's a very vocal minority who believes losing is the way. But the majority of Oklahomans are good people who are hard workers and know that you work hard, you get better every day, and you put your work in and the good things will happen. This is not sheets and ladders. There are no shortcuts to winning. You don't get to winning through losing. If anybody convinces you that, they're probably a loser. If they're not, they're an asshole.
And that brings up a really, really good point. And I'm glad that we were able to have this discussion today. And I really hope this will help people understand where we're coming from in a better way. And I really hope that you guys understand that we're not really, truly assholes. We're just very passionate about our team. So with that being said, thank you for listening to Gary England's Last Storm. This is Dave.
And this is Mark. Thunder up.